Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Shattered Silence, Stories of Recovering Resilience. My name is Jory, and today I am here with David and Kendall. You guys, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having us,
Jory.
Yeah, you guys might recognize David. He was on our season one and just came on to share a story of his own struggles and how he got out of addiction and continues with his sobriety today. And just the success that you found afterwards. And now today we're joined with Kendall, his wife. So Kendall, thank you for joining us and just have your own story to share as well.
Yes.
So I guess we'll just start from the beginning. Just kind of go through your story, how you guys met, and just, yeah, the struggles that you guys kind of have gone through as a couple.
Absolutely.
You want me to start?
Go for it.
All right. So I mean, the story's pretty simple. We met like really in the party scene. I think it was like she saw me from across the room and just couldn't wait to talk to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I'm just kidding. No, we actually met through a mutual friend. And, you know, she probably didn't feel about me the way I felt about her the first time we met. But little by little, we hung out and we actually became friends, you know. And then over the months of knowing each other, we kind of grew together.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely didn't have any intention of dating in the beginning.
Yeah.
I got out of a disastrous relationship before that, you know, so mm-hmm. it was just like, you know, all about having fun, wanting to party, hang out right. with my friends, that kind of thing. And that's how we met. And we were actually, I would say, like really good friends before yeah. we actually dated, mm-hmm. which was rare, you know?
Yeah, that's good. And then, so after you guys met, I know you guys were kind of in the party scene mm-hmm. and kind of getting closer together. But how did that look like for you guys, being in the party scene together, and how was your relationship in the beginning?
So as friends, it was great. But once you get closer to someone and you start to spend, a lot of time together, mm-hmm. you start to see, like, the effects of what, and, you know, at that time, I was, like, heavily struggling with the addiction, you know. In the beginning, we just kind of see each other in highlights, you know, when we're nicely dressed or out and about. Mm-hmm. But then we'd start seeing, like, you know, the deeper issues with addiction in right. each other. And it obviously comes with its own chaos. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's all fun and games until it's not, you
right.
know. And I think that we were both heavy in our addiction in two different ways. And a lot of things that I was struggling with weren't things I was very proud of. So it was a lot of it in secrecy. A lot of it was like, yeah, I'll go out and drink and, you know, hang out, you know, with you guys. But I mean, I would be hours late. It just became, obvious, you mm-hmm. know, obvious that I was struggling mm-hmm. way more than he probably even imagined when he met me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think a lot of people think that like, you know, if in a relationship, if one person is struggling, you know, with, say, alcohol or any other kind of substance, that, you know, only, you know, it's like two people that are struggling should understand each other, mm-hmm. but you don't.
Yeah.
You know, the same chaos, the same, you know, hurt and the same confusion happens. But we did really grow, like, a love for each other during that time.
Yeah.
You know? And it's weird, like in our darkest moments, I remember one of the things, and I hadn't talked about God in forever, you know, and I don't know what sprang me to ask her, but I just asked her, like, do you believe in God? I think the moment that I started to realize that, well, I really want this person in my life for a long time, I really want to be with her, that I started for the first time in a long time to imagine a different life, mm-hmm. you know. And then we were nowhere near getting sober or clean
yeah.
at the time.
Yeah.
But it was like the first little light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And I know we know more of David's story since he's been on here, but do you want to share any more of your backstory, kind of like before you guys met or?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I grew up here in Bakersfield, mm-hmm. and I came from a good family, hardworking parents, you know, but I also always lived on the edge, you know.
Yeah.
I was the baby, so I kind of got away with a lot. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in high school, I was a party girl. You know, I got good grades, but I would party, you know, drink, you know, occasionally use cocaine, and mm-hmm. it was never a problem. I could still function. Mm-hmm. And until I couldn't, you know. Back when I was about to graduate is when OxyContin was really a heavy thing. Mm-hmm. Gotten a serious relationship. I never even took, like, ibuprofen before. So pills weren't my thing.
Yeah.
So it was, like, I had no idea, like, what I was messing with. But, you know, you do it here and there, a little bit this, you know, a little bit OxyContin here. And next thing you know, I wake up and my body is just drenched in sweat. You know, like, I'm in denial that this could be from a pill. But little did I know, I was messing with the most powerful drug.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because at the time, you just do a little bit and you feel good. You just magically feel better. And so I spent many years in denial, you know, that I was actually addicted to something. Until it came to where I would do anything for that drug. It didn't matter. Any morals, no matter the way I was raised, it did not matter. Because it was a physical addiction. And I've never experienced anything like that. I always thought I had control over my body. Yeah. You know, I thought I was normal type of thing. And it just wasn't. It had a hold of me, and it led me down a decade-long addiction. And OxyContin back then was, the new thing now is fentanyl, but OxyContin back then was very expensive. So, of course, you sell everything you have of value. You know, you do anything you can. So it's just nothing. I had nothing to show for anything. And, you know, you go to heroin. It's cheaper, right? It's cheaper. You know, I was terrified of needles my whole life until I wasn't. You know, and that was a scary thing. You know, my parents were absolutely terrified. Here I am, a young girl, a young adult. You know, it definitely wasn't how I imagined my life as a little girl.
Yeah.
Strung out on drugs, in and out of jail, in terrible relationships. You know, it just was a scary thing. And my parents fought tooth and nail for me. I went to every rehab, every treatment, every therapist, and I remember at that time, once I realized how much of a hold this had on me, there's a statistic that went around that only 5% of people ever really come off of heroin. And I was in a county jail thinking this, and my dad, you know, when you're in jail, the only people that come and see you are people that care about you. And he sat across from me and he said, you know what? You're going to be in that 5%. That you're not a statistic. And like he spoke life to me, you know? But I remember feeling doomed. I almost accepted the fact that I'm going to live this way. Yeah. Like, that's how powerful it was. And, you know, granted, I was raised, I had faith as a kid. My parents were, like, you know, there was hope there. Like, I knew that there could be hope. But I thought for me, I was just too far gone, you know? So it was a journey and a lot of, ups and downs, even before I met David, to bring it back to that, multiple treatments. I would have some, recovery, but I would try to go back into old places and things. Like, you think it's crazy. you go in thinking, you know, I'm going to tell them that they can, you know, change, like, you know, you go around the people that you used to, you know, use with or party with, whatever. And you think like, oh, but no, you end up right back where you're at. You know, I knew when I got sober this time, I've been sober since June 20th, 2020. So a little over 5 years.
Yeah.
Completely congrats sober. On that, drugs, by the way. Alcohol, yeah. All of it. And it's a miracle. But I thought I knew when I was at that desperation where I had to get sober, I knew I had to change everything. That meant people, places, things. Everything. I like, as hard as it was, because that's all I knew, you know? Yeah. I mean, that the people I knew, that was all that I had. So I knew that I had to change everything if I really wanted to change. Mm-hmm. And that's hard, you know?
Yeah.
But it was worth it.
Like, all this change. Yeah.
Everything. Yeah.
And gosh, I commend you both for doing that, you know? I'm sure that was so hard to go through.
Yeah.
But so then going back to your guys' relationship and kind of knowing a little bit more of your backstory, how did you guys come to realize that you guys both needed to get sober?
Well, I wish it was like
like a moment,
like
an
easy, like, you know what, we just woke up with this moment of clarity.
We're gonna do this.
You know, held hands at meetings together and treatment, and but it didn't happen that way. You know, I think that most people, because it kind of seems like a flash in the pan. I'll be honest with you. My life changed overnight. It's an absolute miracle, right? Not my life. The direction of my life changed overnight, right? And it happened for both of us. It just happened at different times. And I think that a lot of people you know, need to understand how the dynamics are of like actually trying to get on that journey and stay on that journey, right? And you know, Kendall individually, miracle in her life. Me individually, miracle in life. The fact that we ended up together after it all, another crazy yeah. miracle. You know,
yeah.
But I'd say that the number one thing is that we didn't do this together per se, right? It did happen at the same time for us, though. And I don't mean on the same day. I mean in the same couple-year period, right? But, you know, just to kind of preface what our story looked like. But she could tell you from her side, but I know that, you know, she found out she was pregnant with Max. And she could tell you her side of that story, but she made the decision, hey, I have to get right, you know? And I wanted to deep down in my heart, but there was just something kind of holding me back still. And I was kind of at the end of the road where as far as like, all right, I know I need to turn my life around. You know, I'm not going to say that that a baby will save, you know, anyone who's struggling with addiction. A life-changing, something that's like life-altering, like children or loved ones or anything like that won't be the things to make you change. Yeah. But they'll at least get you to think clearly for a moment.
Yeah.
Because I already had kids. So if it was going to be a baby, it would have happened three babies ago,
right,
you know?
Right, yeah.
So it wasn't necessarily that, but it kind of all, you know, to me, it was God's plan, you know, all a perfect storm. And she decided to get sober. I wasn't quite ready. I kind of, you know, she was doing her thing. And you know, I'll be honest, I was sitting there lying like, yeah, babe, I'm going to do it too. Or I've been good out here. Don't worry about me. Then she gets out and sees me and is like, dude, come on,
yeah.
you know, but she can tell you her side of
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Well, definitely. That was a rude awakening. You know, when you're living that lifestyle, the last thing you think is, oh, I'm pregnant. You know, come to find out I was 4 months pregnant, you know, and to be God's honest truth, the lifestyle we're living, I was like, I can't bring a baby into this world. So abortion crossed my mind, and I'm thankful that didn't happen. But at that time, I was too far along, you know? Yeah. So we were at a crossroads. It's mm-hmm. like, I've always said, if I had kids, I would never do drugs. You know, like I never wanted to ruin their lives, right? Mm-hmm. But so we, because I was on an opiate, addicted to opiates, mm-hmm. I had to be on a medication called Subutex through my pregnancy so that my baby wouldn't have a withdrawals. Mm-hmm. And that makes you feel terrible, you know, but I was thankful for that medication. Okay. And my baby came out. I call him my miracle baby.
Yeah.
Zero withdrawals, healthy. God honest truth, I didn't know I could love something so much
yeah.
until I had a little boy. But that was just the beginning of our recovery story because I'd like to say that kept me sober, but it wasn't. We were here we are, two of us, only know each other in addiction, the crazy lives, and here we are dealing with real life issues, you know? And it's like, are we even going to like each other sober?
Yeah.
You know, like it was a whole nother yeah. thing. Uh-huh. And we'd often end up in fights, you know? And he mentioned he had kids previously. I kind of felt like, what makes me different? You know,
Let's just say on paper, I wasn't a winner.
Yeah. I felt alone, even though he was there. Like in my mind, I felt like I was going to have to do this all alone. And anyways, I kind of kept myself in that way. And I thought that somehow I could just still juggle like, okay, as long as I'm not, being a new mom, you're tired. I was like, okay, so I'll just do like a little bit of uppers, you know, like, you know, so I can do my day, like, and all that. But like, no matter what I did, no matter how much I tried to control whatever I was doing, you don't have control over it, yeah. you know? But safe to say, you actually stayed sober. He actually stayed sober since Max has been born. And
good for you.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I struggled. I still had a battle on my hands for the first year and a half after I had him. No matter how much I try to say how good everything was, it wasn't because I wasn't happy. I knew what I was doing was wrong and I didn't want to raise my kid this way. I just didn't know how to get out of it.
Yeah. Well, especially and, like postpartum, you just like have all kinds of
yeah,
emotions
yeah,
you're going
it
through.
It was a whirlwind.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I think that, we were both trying to get sober and at that time, so we moved into a place and it was hard because he could talk more about it too, but he would make sure I was doing stuff, or like kind of like micromanage what I was doing.
Like and a parent would almost, you know?
Oh, it drove me insane. I just couldn't get drove me crazy because like the more he kept trying to force things or like, you know, the more I wanted to run from it, you know?
Aspire Counseling Services provides caring, personalized support for adults and teens facing mental health challenges. From group therapy to mindfulness, art, and even pet therapy, their programs are designed to help people feel better and build healthier habits. Teens can get the support they need while still keeping up with school and home life. You can reach Aspire at 888-585-7373.
Right. Well, you know, just to touch on that a little bit, I think that's another very important part because, you know, I was, you know, sober 2 months before Max was born. And, you know, I think in early recovery, everybody wants everything back immediately, right? Not understanding that we spent years kind of digging this hole, you know, and it's going to take some time to get out, you know. I remember, you know, calling Kendall from rehab and it being like, 2 days in, and I'm like, "What? You don't trust me yet?" You know, like I've been sober for 2 whole days. You know, and it's just things like that. And I remember thinking, like, "Man, this is such a beautiful moment." And you know, later on, I didn't get to work through any of like my. I realized it was like codependency, right? A lot like a parent or a brother, right? That is now with that has someone in their life who struggles with addiction. Yeah. And it really affects that person, right? So there I was on my recovery journey. And then, you know, I was in denial about Kendall and her using a lot the way it was a denial about mine. You know, it's like, oh, it's not that bad. She's going to be all right. And, you know, it was kind of weird in a way because this is where I knew I had an issue. I had someone in my life at the time that was like, okay, so you're okay with her hurting herself. As long as it's with you and in your house.
Yeah.
And I was like, dang, that's twisted.
Yeah. You know?
That's gross. And
that's a weird perspective. But
And by this time, you know, my relationship with Jesus was just, I mean, he's always been there, but I was just barely getting back into that, into my relationship with Christ. And luckily, you know, the thing that I knew how to do was just fall to my knees. And just like I surrendered my addiction, just like I surrendered all the other issues, my past, all of those things, it came time for me to do the same thing with her, you know? And I remember a real pivotal moment was one where I kind of always had this hope that we would end up being together again. And I had to realize that, you know what? We may not. You know?
Yeah.
And it's not like a you do you, I'll do me kind of attitude. I don't want it to sound that way. But it did need to happen for her to grow closer to God and me to grow closer to God so that we in turn could be closer to each other,
right.
You know? And I had to accept the fact that her being closer to God might be with or without me, you know? And that was a tough pill to swallow, you know? And then I realized that I felt like I struggled with codependency and, you know, I could never be free. And if I'm never free myself, we would never be free, right? Because trust me, the smothering and all that stuff to all the parents out there, all the siblings out there, someone who's struggling with someone in a relationship, the smothering doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't work. It doesn't help. You know, I had to learn that the hard way. And this, you know what's crazy? It's probably because I felt everything because I was sober at the time.
Yeah.
But I felt every emotion. Right. I had nothing to run to mask that feeling or drown it out. So it was if I remember it being a lot tougher than actually giving up drugs and alcohol, you know, and it was hard, you know, but until the moment that, you know, she gave me a call and said, hey, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. And I want to be with you for the rest of my life. And I was like, I'm down.
Yeah.
Let's do this.
It was totally a God moment because I had my own place. I was taking care of my kid, even though I wasn't sober. I felt like I was being responsible, right, for once, and I wasn't. It was a lie that I would tell myself. But it came to a point where I had to have my own experience, you know, wanting to change, you know, because the more that it felt forced, the more it turned me away. Like it, and I knew I never wanted to stay that way. I just didn't know how I would get out, right? And so it took me to separate from him. It took me to, you know, look at my life, look at my little baby and just be like, you know what? I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done. Like, this is not serving me. Like, I just saw so much bad things happening if I continued where I was at. You know, I have a responsibility now. But, and it took me a year and a half after that birth. You know, I'd like to say that kids change everything. They're a part of it. But you have to change. You have to really want it if you want to change your life, you know. And I say it's a God thing because, to be quite honest, a couple weeks, you know, a few days before, I was fine doing what I was doing. And it just dawned on me. I had a heart change, and I just called that morning, and I haven't touched, even to this day, I haven't touched a drug or a drink since. I was done. It was my time.
Yeah,
you know. And so I,
that's so awesome.
I knew I'd go through some withdrawals, and that's the hardest thing, especially for anyone that struggles with you know, opiates or physical, you know, addictions. I knew I had to be in a safe place. You know, I had to go somewhere, and you know, even if it's just for 30 days, I had to go somewhere to be away from it, because that's when you're most vulnerable, because you don't want to feel like crap, you know? Yeah. So I went into Capistrano, actually, here. It's a county program, free. Went there and got right for 30 days, and got rid of the physical thing. But the key that I did different, that I didn't do all the other rehabs that I mentioned that I did, was I actually got a sponsor. I actually started, like, working on my recovery, like, as uncomfortable as it was, like, I didn't even call my own mom every day. It was kind of weird for me to call somebody every day, especially someone I didn't even know.
Right.
But I was like, you know what? I said I was going to do everything different this time. I was going to do what was suggested to me. And I did. I just started forming that relationship. And I started, you know, working the steps, attending meetings, like, plugging my time with different things than what I was used to. And, you know, here I am. It actually does work, you know?
Yeah, that's so awesome. Congrats on that.
Thank you.
And then touching on, like, the, like, navigating all of this stuff as a couple, you know, it was not the most ideal time, you know? I mean, your birthday, you were still in treatment, weren't you? June 13th.
No,
right before, right after.
I was still out
Max's
there.
Birthday. Max's the actual date. Yeah, we celebrated it after. You know, it's like a lot of people want to wait for, like, the most ideal time, but it wasn't the most ideal time. Yeah. You know, it was just like I work was getting super busy for me. You know. Sometimes people think, like, how could I be gone for 30 days? How could I be gone for a couple weeks even, or a couple days? And it's just like, it's just trust, you know, trust that things will work out. You know, it's weird. I always say that our addiction and our mind always have the ability to make the solution look like the problem, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, well, there's no way I can go get right because all of this will get affected. Well, everything's already getting torn to shreds you know? So, you know, it's never the most ideal time. It's never the most ideal situation. But if we just have that trust, great things can happen. You know, miracles can absolutely happen.
I felt like it was now or never. That's how I felt. It was like an urgency that I knew that if it was going to be that time, it's going to be now. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know it's like, I mean, I have a baby. I know I had to line things up, but it was just like, just if you want to get sober, there's a will. There's a way to do it.
Yeah, that's and what I was gonna say. Scramble a little bit, but you can figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can figure it out.
And it's not easy. It's not easy, but man, it feels good.
Yeah,
you know, feels good.
And
feels
right. Look at you now. Like you're like, it was absolutely worth it, right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and it's one of those things too. Even continuing to be involved in recovery. I mean, it's easy when you kind of don't got nothing going for you. Now, for my story, it was different. I mean, I didn't have a job. I didn't have all these things, you know. So I didn't have to, like, take time off of anywhere to go do it or anything like that. So as you start to jump back into the swing of things and as life starts to kind of, you know, you start getting more involved into everything in life. For me, it was being a dad, you know, starting to work again. you know, when you have nothing, it's easy to say, yeah, I'll stay committed to this. But the beauty of the gift is that the gift is a full life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, like fast forward to today. I mean, just this week alone, it's like stuff like this, helping out at our, our Celebrate Recovery at Discovery Church, Max's sports, you know, trips with my son, Alex, you know, like all these things, it all works out, you know, if you put the right thing first,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so navigating that for us was a little bit more difficult than normal, you know? You know, we have kids. We still want to stay committed to our recovery. We have our walk with God. And the thing is that it's not all a bunch of different plates we spin, you know? I feel very strongly that if God is a priority, everything else will work out, yeah. You know? He's not going to be cruel to us and say, hey, here are two good things, pick one.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
It'll all line up, you know? You know, it's like, I always like to use this analogy where it's like, you know, people talk about things falling into place, right? Well, if you're in the wrong place where something falls, it might smash you.
Yeah.
You know, but if your feet are where they're supposed to be, that things will fall into place around you. You know, and that kind of happened for us, you know? We just, you know, since we got back together, we just kind of kept our eyes on the same thing and everything else fell into place.
So was it after, like, Kendall, how, like, you're going into treatment, your recovery, how was that afterwards, like, coming out of treatment, and how did you guys get back together?
So I talked a big game, you know, like, yeah, I'm sure that, you know, you do, you know, you're going to go ahead, and I'm going to be good without you, and I know you're going to be good without me, because you told me so. Uh-huh. So I talked a big game, but the second she called, it was like, you know, yeah. I'm ready.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, the day she was out, she just came straight. Back mm-hmm. home.
Went
yeah.
home.
Yeah.
Went home with my son. And
yeah.
You know, it was like this. It was a rude awakening because it's like I can either keep going down this road and I know what's going to happen, or I can, you know, give this a shot. Even though I don't know what's going to happen, you know, in this whole recovery thing, I don't know what's going to happen in my relationship. I have no idea. But I already know what's going to happen here. So I just went full throttle. I was like, you know, let's just dive in. I'm going to give it my all, 100%. Like, I'm going to try. And here we are, you know, and but it just went with the effort of I'm going to do what's best to make this work, you know, and I knew it was right because it felt right, you know, and I knew that, you know, who's going to love my baby more than his dad, yeah. You know, and I'm blessed that he even still loves me after all the things we went through, you know, and so it felt right. And I knew that I was right where I needed to be. Yeah. Granted, our recoveries had to be separate.
Yeah.
We serve together, you know, we do recovery together meetings, but our recoveries are different.
Yeah.
You know, like he can't be my sponsor and I can't be his sponsor. Yeah. It's just not going to work.
Yeah.
You know, we have to have other people in our life that guide us, you know, especially being married, you know, being married and having a family. Like there's going to be difficulties. There's going to be triumphs. There's going to be different things that we go through that we're going to need some advice from other people, you know, because it just doesn't work when we are trying to micromanage each other's life, you know? Right. So I think that the standard, you know, in the very beginning, that was a good thing that helped us is he had his sponsor. I had my sponsor and there's like, I really appreciated my first sponsor because I didn't know her. I didn't know nothing about her, but I was like, you know what? I need to know that I can trust you. Cause like I was hanging on to all these things, all these secrets, all these resentments, all these things that kept me in my addiction for years. Things I said I would never repeat, that I would take to the grave, right? We had some of those.
Yeah.
But, you know, but that's what was keeping me in bondage, you know? And I got to work knowing that, like, I could trust that one. I just need one person,
yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And I had that one person that I trusted, and I was able to work through all this, mm-hmm. knowing that, okay, he's, you know, as nosy as he wants to be, or if you want, like, I could trust her. I could trust her, but I had to get it out. Now, things that I said I would take to my grave, we could laugh about today.
Yeah.
Right.
But, like, at the time, they were a big deal, you know? Uh-huh. And it just shows that, like, I don't want to hold on to anything like that, you know? And I don't have to, you know?
Yeah.
And now when I feel something like that, it's like, it's just like an, I know where it leads me, so it's just like an icky feeling. Like, I gotta have good people around me that I can talk to, get advice, you know, sponsor, like people that understand, you know, understand me. But I had a huge trust issue, especially with women, you know, going into recovery. I just kind of always felt that way. Like, I can't trust her. Like, you know, you can't really let people know how you're feeling, or, you know, that you're scared or fearful. Like, you know, you always gotta put on this persona because you gotta be strong, right? But that's just so far from the truth, because I mean, we can only be strong until we're not, you know. And let's be real, we're humans, you know. We all make mistakes. People have hurt us. There's things that that we go through. And the more that I was honest, had to be brutally honest. Sobriety doesn't work if you're still hiding secrets. It just won't. You won't stay sober, you know. And so I knew that, you know, as awful as it sounds, as embarrassing as it was of things that I've did, I got to let it out, you know, and come to find out, well, she did a lot of the same things I did, you know, I wasn't as, you know, as alone as I thought I was, you know. And so it was a whole process, but you formed that was the most important relationship that I had, that and with God, before I put any of this, you know, our relationship together. It's like, I had to have that relationship right. Mm-hmm. If I align this right, all this works out, you know. And that's been my testimony. Yeah. You know, that's been proven for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's awesome. I want to go back a little bit about, like, you guys help out at your church.
Yeah.
Talk about what you guys are doing now.
Yeah. So Celebrate Recovery is a Christ-centered 12-step program. Our actual recovery journey didn't start in Celebrate Recovery. It started in AA, and we love AA. It's done a lot of great things for us. We went to meetings at Aspire. You know, I got sober at Jason's Retreat, and Third Tradition. Those are my 12 months that I spent in treatment. But yeah, we serve there at our Celebrate Recovery. We feel one of the things that I love about Celebrate Recovery is that it's not just for, substance abuse. It's for all kinds of different things. You know, I think the statistic is in Celebrate Recovery, only, you know, 2 out of 30 people, I think it is there for an actual substance, but it's everything else. And I've experienced both sides. You know, I feel that I've been the person that the family is begging to stop, right? Like, please stop. Like, you know, you know, you have people who love you. You don't have mm-hmm. to do this to yourself, all those kinds of things. And then I've been that person in a relationship too, you know, mm-hmm. And man, both of them are equally a struggle, mm-hmm. you know, and there's
so so is it like families?
No, it's not families. It's meant to, like, we were just talking about for individual, but there is, like, there's kid care and stuff. And then there are some Celebrate Recoveries that have, like, the landing for teenagers and kids and stuff like that. But it's not just for substance abuse only.
Okay.
So there's things like codependency, if someone's struggling with gambling, if someone's struggling.
Pornography.
All kinds of different
things. Really, it's just life. Honestly.
Whatever hurt, habit, or hang up.
Whatever's keeping you from
clarity on that.
Because you know,
I love that, though.
Bondage is bondage.
Yeah.
Whether it's alcohol, drugs, or gambling, or anything like that, bondage is bondage, and the effects of that on not only that individual's life but the loved ones is mm-hmm. the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's still detrimental. So
it's a lot like AA, just with verses and things, like, you know, it's just a faith behind it. But you do, like, AA is big on the 12 steps. We do that in Celebrate Recovery too. Very similar. You know, it's like those are really the most important thing. If you truly want to recover, you got to work through those steps. Yep. You know, you can't just start at step 8 and think that you got to start at step 1 all the way through. Yep. And you know, have somebody guide you through that, because that's where the freedom is. You can attend a million meetings and still not recover.
Yeah. You could be sober for years and never have actual recovery.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and you know what's crazy is I really thought that these things were meant just for people addicted to drugs and alcohol, but it's not. I mean, it's basic stuff. It's actually been taught, you know, it's actually all stems from the Sermon on the Mount, that's in the book of Matthew. And it's always been there. It's just how to apply it. I will say one thing unique for me is that I was at a point where, to me, I do treat this like a matter of life and death, because for me it was, you know, I knew I couldn't continue on doing what I was doing and make it much further. So I just had to do this in order I had to do this in order to stay alive, you know, and not everybody has that kind of struggle. Right. You know, there's a lot of people that are for mental health. Like I said, all the other things that I listed, there's a lot. Yeah, but it's pretty awesome because it's really inclusive and it's very it's pretty broad, but the message is the same.
Yeah, you know? And I feel the like solution that feels pretty. Yeah, I feel like that probably feels pretty good for you guys to kind of help and give back and share your own stories.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean it feels good, and it's really not just for us though. And I tell even the guys that I help that it's like, yeah, this is you're gonna see some change in your life for you, but it's not just for you. You know, it's for the person you and I haven't even met yet that we're going to talk to eventually, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, you know, navigating all those things, like I said, could get complicated with your life gets full, you know, and I eventually thought that, you know, this thing that the time and days and attention that I'm slotting for recovery eventually is going to have to go away. I mean, I got to be a father, you know, I got to work again. I got to be a husband. But no, they all work. They all work as long as we keep the right thing in the right place. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you realize you don't have all that if you don't do this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, that goes away really fast. Yeah. You know, it has to be a priority. Mm-hmm. You know, just like we made out there, using and drinking a priority. I mean, that was like what our life resolved around. You know, like we had to replace that with different things. And then the longer that I've been on this recovery journey, the more that I realized that, like, I gotta help people. I want people, to, you know, I want to spread that hope because I was once that person, you know? Yeah. And, you know, if you don't share it, why did you go through all that bad stuff for nothing? Right. You know, I believe that I went through all that stuff so that I can help other people. You know, because I was once that girl that felt like I was going to be this way forever, mm-hmm. you know, that I was doomed, that I was worthless, you know, you name it. I felt it. And it took someone in recovery, someone that had a little bit more time than me, you know, a little bit, you know, journey of sobriety than me to tell me like, look, you can do this, you know, and that's what this is all about, you know, is spreading hope to the hopeless.
Right.
That's really exactly. To simplify it. That's what it's about. And if you don't, you know, I there's some people stay sober and they, you know, they're not a part of anything, and maybe they stay sober for a while. That hasn't been my story. I've had to stay involved and give back, because otherwise you're running on empty.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You're not filled. You're running on empty and your purpose is not there, mm-hmm. you know?
So that's what I come from a different perspective, you know, but I saw Kyle struggle, mm-hmm. and I saw what it did to him. And you know, he lied to me often, because he was lying to himself, you know, and he had a period where he was doing well. So I thought, you know, I don't know. I don't think I'll ever really know the answer. And if he was still kind of dabbling in, the pills, but that's again, what this is about too.
Yeah.
Cause I know that he like wholeheartedly would just want to help people and just talk about it. And like you said, you didn't know all your deep, dark secrets that this person has done the same, you know, it's like you felt less alone. And that's exactly what we're doing here, is just helping people not feel alone. And I may not be on like that side of things where I had an addiction personally, but I was the loved one on the other side. And I did see him struggle. So,
absolutely. And you know, it's one of those things that we can't deem for someone else. It's like, hey, you're struggling. You know, it's something that we all got to come to a realization on our own, you know, and it wasn't until that. I mean, there was nothing she could have said to make me change.
Right.
It's just one day it was just like, all right, this is it.
Right.
It was on the opposite. I thought everything was going to be smooth sailing once I got sober. And she was actually like, you know what? I don't know if we're going to do this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? I thought I'm doing good now. I'm being a good boy, you know? And I was like, what the heck? It just seems like now all of a sudden everything's was supposed to go the way it's like honestly, it was my way that I thought it should be, and it just wasn't. So it's never something that someone could tell someone to do it. The best thing we could do is really just plant seeds, you know, and back to the whole, you know, like going, like doing this as a couple. It's really one of those things where it is an individual journey. yeah, we're probably on the same road, maybe on like a different lane. But it's definitely one of those things where, you know, we definitely inspired each other. You know, she inspired me so much because I stopped the using and the drinking. But for whatever reason, it took me a long time to just like work on my actual self, like my attitude and my behavior and stuff like that. And she inspired me because it was like she started this journey a couple years after. And I feels like I saw her change overnight.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, dude, she's like, you know, like running circles around me, it feels like, you know, and it like really forced me to take a really close look at myself and make the changes, not for her, you know, but to write the things in my life. And it's just crazy how it all works, you know. And here's the cool thing is that, you know, we did find each other and you know, that seed of love got planted in a, like a super hopeless, dark place. Okay. But that doesn't have to be everybody's story. But just like we inspired each other, just like we helped each other out, or just like we motivated each other or looked to each other, that the whole recovery community is like that. You know, so it doesn't have to be a spouse or a, you know, someone, you know, I don't want people going to recovery meetings looking for a dating relationship, you know, we actually say that's not one of the things. So disclaimer, that's not what we did, but it's one of those things that, like she was talking about giving people hope, you know, for me, it was just that I felt hopeless too. And I was like, man, maybe whatever it is that's working in these people's lives can work for me too.
Yeah.
Just maybe.
Yeah.
You know? Just maybe. And it just takes trust. You know, you had asked about her coming back home and stuff like that. It's not like it all was timed perfectly and the lease was up and everyone moved out peacefully. No, the house she was in, I was like, we're just going to keep paying it until the lease is up.
Yeah.
I just left.
And so we just continued to pay it until the lease was up. And, you know, it just is what it is. You know, you just kind of go. And I didn't have the, like, if you remember the time she's talking about, this was like during COVID. You know? So it wasn't like she had the coolest meetings to go to. It was like all on Zoom, you know? It wasn't like I was just crushing it at work and had all this money, you know? But I wasn't working. So it was like we just trusted and we said, we'll do whatever we have to do. And it just all works out. You know, it all works out.
I feel like that just really shows your dedication too during COVID, having to do it on Zoom meetings. That's crazy.
It was a new experience for sure.
And then afterwards, like the years since, you know, life has had some amazing ups and then some pretty low lows too, you know? And this is what I give Christ and these principles the most credit for, is that it's not so much about how high the highs are and how awesome they look, right? And it's not about what's on Instagram or any of that stuff, but it's the lows that we can actually go through and not have to run back to what was hurting us, you know? Because those were all the things that we used to go back for. As soon as we felt uneasy, it was like right back, you know? And it's one of those things that it's really beautiful, and that's how I know that this recovery journey works. And it's why I'm so passionate about it and why we're so passionate about it as a couple, and what it's done for us. You know, that's basically our story. We can only say what Christ has done for us, what these steps have done for us, what these principles has done for us, living this lifestyle has done for us, and hope that it could do that for other people.
Well, I really appreciate you guys coming on and sharing your piece of your story and just, like we said, giving people hope. Is there any piece of advice that you guys would want to give anyone watching today?
Go first.
Go for it.
All right. How much time do we got? No, I'm just kidding. well, I mean, I would say the number one thing is, you know, if someone that you know is struggling, let them know that there is help available. Keep reminding that person, no matter what, no matter how bad it is, no matter what they may have done, keep reminding them that help is still available. And number two, I encourage everybody to really educate themselves, because it's a different time, you know, to be alive and to be experimenting even. You know, it wasn't like this when, you know, 8 years ago when I was using drugs, you know, it was... now it's really scary, you know, specifically with fentanyl. You know, you could be ordering something or asking for something and thinking it's that. and you know, hoping that that person is telling you the truth, and it may not be. You know, at the end of the day, people just care about making a quick buck, you know? Yeah. So it's very important for people to educate themselves. You know, part of the ministry is, you know, Narcan education and then handing Narcan out. And I know a lot of people, especially in the recovery world, look at it as like a crutch or like maybe even like enabling. But the way that a lot of us see it is that if that person could be alive, there's a chance for help. There's a chance to get help. Mm-hmm. There's still hope as long as we're alive. But it's important to educate, for everyone to be educated about it. Number one, how Narcan works. Number two, what it actually does, right? And how someone can administer it and help people out. Whether it's active users or having kids in our home that we know live in the age of experimentation, right? It's all those things. It's a conversation that needs to be had, and it's tough to have. And, you know, I think families have always had this dynamic, right? There's a lot of things to talk to our teenagers about. Whether it's about like sex or, you know, alcohol or, you know, drinking and driving, all these things. And it should be a topic for everyone now, because unfortunately it is an epidemic. And it's one of those things that if nobody's talking about it, it's how we hear these horror stories on the news, you know.
You see these really super young overdoses because, again, they're experimenting. It could be their first time, and many times it is, like I've seen.
And what it is poisoning, really.
It is, and that's actually what we've been talking about more specifically this season, is just we've had people come on young overdoses and just like, oh, I'm going to take a Xanax, half of a Xanax that has fentanyl in it, something that should not have killed someone, but it does.
And it just takes that one time, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, I think the numbers, like some crazy, like the example is the tip of a pencil lead is all it would take, you know?
Right.
And trust me, when people are looking to have fun or party or experiment, they're not asking for a tip of a pencil lead.
A lead of a pencil, you know?
So the point is that, you know, if everyone educates themselves, has a conversation, then I think that we can avoid a lot of it. You know, I think that we could avoid a lot of it. There's two really people that this fentanyl epidemic are hurting. The active user who's struggling with addiction, right? And then these people who are just trying to have a good time for a weekend, right? Trying something for the first time, right? Or unfortunately experiencing like going down that path, right? Of like starting with something, some kind of gateway drug. They're all different now. Right. And then end up using something stronger. So it's a conversation that can sometimes be difficult to have, but I just encourage people to have it, you know?
Yeah.
And then for anyone that's, you know, considering starting that recovery journey, it's just nothing's ever going to be perfect, right? There's never going to be the right time, okay? And don't believe the lies. The lies is that you're alone. And for me, it is a spiritual journey, right? So I feel like the enemy is going to try to tell us that we're alone, that it's not worth it. And what's the point? These were questions that went on in my mind all the time, right? And if we look at God's word and trust God's word, he reminds us the exact opposite, right? So it's one of those things that there is help available. There is no shame in it. There is nothing that we can't overcome. And if you are alive today, then it's for a reason.
Right.
It's for a purpose.
Yeah, definitely.
And if I could leave anything, it would be, you're not too far gone. You know, you're not too far gone to get help. From my experience, I've buried probably two handfuls of people to addiction, and being one that I've overdosed myself, by the grace of God, I'm here. But is that, you know what, you're not too far gone, and there is hope, and you are here for a purpose, you know. And if I could just leave that with anyone that may be struggling, it's worth it. You know.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on.
Thank
I really
you for
appreciate
having
you
us.
Sharing.
Thanks, Tori.
Thanks, Tori.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of Shattered Silence. As always, don't forget to follow us on all of our socials on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. You can watch full episodes on YouTube, or you can listen in on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.